Welcome to the History of North America. I'm Mark Vinette. Native communities in southeastern Canada and northern New York State warred amongst themselves long before the arrival of Europeans on the continent. By the early 17th century, however, new alliances were formed, and the Iroquois became mortal enemies of the French. The French attempted to form better relations and alliances with the local First Nations tribes, including Wendat Hurons, Algonquins, and Montagnais, who lived in the area of the St. Lawrence River. These tribes sought help in their war against the Haudenosaunee, also known as the Iroquois Confederacy, League, or Five Nations. Let's learn more from the Iroquois History and Legends podcast.
Iroquois history and legends, how they lived and what their houses were like, and also the constitution of the Iroquois and how their government worked. The name Haudenosaunee literally means they are making a longhouse or people of the longhouse. Okay, now I'm confused. Because I learned in school that the Native Americans, they lived in teepees.
Well, some plains people did live in little teepees or tents, but we're talking about Eastern Native Americans. And in the Northeast woods, they lived in longhouses. Wood was plentiful, and so their houses were made out of wood. This wasn't like a house like you and I have. This was a pretty big house. Some of them could be 100 feet long. Some of them were as long as a football field.
Yikes.
They were huge. And very long and narrow. They used their house as a symbol for their whole nation. They viewed their whole five nations together as a longhouse. A longhouse is really long. It's a bark thatched building, and then it has two big doors on each end. That was the only way in, only way out. They had bunks going down the side where they could use for sleeping and storage. And then in the middle, they had fires where they could cook and keep warm. And how does that relate to how their nation was set up allegorically?
Well, one thing to think about it. How big is a 100-foot or 100-yard long house? That's a huge house to only have two doors. But the reason for it was actually because it was a security thing. It was a lot easier to defend your home if you only had two entrances. So you'll see in their confederation, for example, the Seneca Nation was the furthest to the west. Therefore, they were known as the keepers of the western door.
So, symbolically, that would be like you living on the west-facing door of the longhouse. It was your responsibility to guard that door.
Yeah, and make sure no enemies came through there. So, if you continued to move east from the Seneca, you'd come to the next nation, which was the Cayuga. The Cayuga were known as a little brother in the Confederacy, and the Seneca was a big brother. And then, continuing to move east, we come to the Onondaga, who are known as the Keepers of the Fire. This is the middle nation of the longhouse. Because remember, the name Haudenosaunee actually means people of the longhouse. I'm basically describing you a rectangle of land. So we've started at the western door, and now we've moved to the center, the firekeepers, where just like in the longhouse, the fire was kept. From there, we would move to the Oneida, who were another little brother, and then to the Mohawk, the keepers of the eastern door. So we have older brothers and younger brothers. Does that mean that certain ones had more say in the council, or what did that mean to have older brothers and younger brothers?
We're going to talk about consensus building and how everything was unanimous, actually, in the council. But the main thing was that younger brothers and older brothers, just like we're viewing the longhouse as a building and then as a nation, you also want to think of the council as a family. If on the council, the last time they had met, somebody died, and they were a member of an older brother nation, well, the younger brothers would get together and they'd hold a condolence ceremony, and they'd go through the motions of saying, you know, how sorry they are and give the wampum, and they'd talk about other things on how to assuage their grief and things like that. And then conversely, the opposite way, if somebody on the younger brothers, then the elder brothers would get together and they would help them when they were going through their mourning process. So it was a symbolic thing that went together as well.
Another thing. We've been talking about the Seneca, the Cayuga, the Onondaga, the Oneida, and the Mohawk, but where do the Tuscarora come into play in this?
Well, at the moment, the Tuscarora are way down in North Carolina. There are other Iroquois people out here that are not members of the Iroquois League. And so the Tuscarora were one of those people. There were other people like the Cherokee and other smaller tribes up in the St. Lawrence River, and some people even would classify Huron people as an Iroquoian people. So right now, the Tuscarora are living their life down in North Carolina, and they were cousins of the Five Nations, and they were adopted to become the Sixth Nation.
And what year was it that they became part of the Confederacy?
Officially, it was 1722. They had been migrating some time before, but that's when they came.
So the council is a league based on the concept of representation, not necessarily democracy. It wasn't everybody had a say and everybody got a vote, but a lot like what we have in America, and some people even make the argument that this is where America got the idea, was to send people that were of good moral character to represent you and your nation. The men that sit on the councils from each nation are known as sachems.
A lot of times you may hear them called chiefs, but sachem was a distinction. They were, if you want to use the term, they were a chief. And in some literature, you may hear them called the 50 chiefs, but they were called sachems in this particular role.
Yeah, because you'll hear chiefs for all sorts of different positions. Like the Revolutionary War, you hear about a Mohawk war chief. So the sachem really distinguishes. It's not just a chief. This means that they are actually political office, almost like a senator representing your state. It was more than just saying they were the chief or they were the war chief. It's important to understand that.
These sachems, how did they get on these councils?
In most countries and cultures, we see so often how people get these positions of power is they have a family that was super rich or has been here a long time, or they come from very powerful area or family. But that is completely different than the way they did it. And also, in so many other countries, the strongest men rise up and become the strongest chiefs and leaders. But they had a brilliant way of doing this. And what they did, each nation had a certain amount of clan mothers in it. And the clan mother would pick a sachem that was honest, reliable, clear-headed, and had a great knowledge of the laws and values, and they would be appointed by the head women in their clans.
We're talking about women appointing men to political positions?
Yes, it's true. So many people think the chiefs, there's these great warriors, and they run everything within the council, but when it comes right down to it, the chiefs are actually chosen by the women. They're elected by the women. And set to represent their nations.
So you mentioned some of these values, and I also read that they can't be gossipers, they can't be going around committing adultery, they have to be real mentors, they can't have committed any violent crimes.
And it was encouraged for them to be married men with children. That way you could basically remind them that they are to be treating the nation and the people they represent as if they're their children, and look at them with the same care that they would their own family.
So they get appointed, and they probably had an equal representation, right? Like we have two senators from every state, so they had 50 there, so 50 divided by five. They had 10 each, right?
No. It's kind of interesting how they do this, but here's the breakdown for the nations. They actually would have 14 sachems from the Onondaga, 10 from the Cayuga, 9 from the Oneida, 9 from the Mohawk, and 8 from the Seneca.
But that just doesn't sound fair. Why do the Onondaga get the most? Just seems like they could just have their way with everybody.
It's especially interesting because they actually believe that as far as population go, the Seneca actually had the largest population out of any of them.
But they only had 8.
That's right. We think about it in America as our representatives each having a certain amount of votes. So therefore, if somebody had 10 and somebody had 9, they could basically vote to take property from them. But they look at this as if they're their own individual nations. So if you think about it, there's really no difference from there being 5 in one and 15 in another, because they're only making decisions in their council that affect everybody as a whole. They're not voting like we might in America to say, okay, we really need some money here in New York, so we're going to go and lobby, raise the taxes in California to help us out. It's completely madness. So even though there was less sachems in certain tribes, in certain nations, they all basically had the same amount of say in the council.
The original names of the 50 people that started the council, when somebody would pass on, they would appoint a new person and they would actually take their name like a title. So to put it in perspective today, we would say that President of the United States, we would just call him Washington. It would be the title because he would be the first one.
So what you're saying is the chief Tadadaho, that name still sits on the council to this day.
To this day, the leader of the Council of 50, official title name is Tadadaho. So you mentioned that the clan mothers appoint those sachems, but how did you get the position of Tadadaho?
The Onondaga chiefs would come up with a candidate for Tadadaho, and then they would put it up for consideration to the clan mothers. So it was basically a decision between the whole nation of the Onondaga's leaders, between those sachems and chiefs and the clan mothers, to come up with that highest position. Okay, so we have the 50 sachems here. This is a life appointment, and this seems really dangerous. What happens if a tyrant gets one of these lifetime appointments as a leader for their nation?
Yeah, they thought of that because they knew what people were like. And so just like the clan mothers could appoint you, they could impeach you and have you removed. So if the clan mothers got together and they said, this person's a bad egg, they would ask the war chief. We have separation of powers here. The war chief was the person in charge of military affairs. And then you have the sachem, which is council of the 50, a political position. And so the clan mothers would get together and they'd say to the war chief, you need to remove this guy from office.
So basically the clan mother would show up. If she thought he wasn't doing a good job, she would show up and give him a warning. And then what would happen from there if he decided to not listen to his nation or his clan mother?
Well, the great thing is, you know, we talk about, you know, the Iroquois Constitution, and there's many different articles that they have, and this is in there, and so I'm going to actually quote it.
Quote, when a lord is to be deposed, his war chief shall address him as follows. So you disregard and set not the warning of your women relatives, so fling you the warnings over your shoulder to cast them behind you. Behold! The brightness of the sun, and in the brightness of the sun's light, I dispose you of your title and remove the sacred emblem from your lordship title. I remove from your brow the deer antlers, which was the emblem of your position and token of your nobility. Now I dispose you and return the antlers to the women whose heritage they are. As I now have disposed and discharged you so that you are now no longer a lord, you now shall go your way alone. The rest of the people of the Confederacy will not go with you, for we know not the kind of mind you possess. As the Creator has nothing to do with wrong, so he will not come to rescue you from the precipice of destruction which you have cast yourself. You shall never be restored to the position which you have occupied. Unquote.
That's pretty heavy stuff right there. So not only would you get impeached, but you basically get tongue-lashed in front of the entire council.
And excommunicated and banished. Do you think that the women were able to keep some of these leaders in line?
Yeah, it's really making me start to think that the men, it's not like they were running everything. They truly were representatives, and they really did have to properly represent and live a moral life, or there would be serious consequences.
Check out the YouTube version of this episode, which has accompanying images. I'm Mark Vinette, and I hope you're enjoying the ride. Doctors endorse it, nutritionists recommend it, and customers love it. Calotrin Healthy Weight Loss. Ron in Texas lost 35 pounds. Marie in Pennsylvania lost 117 pounds with Calotrin. Diane not only lost weight, but she also found relief from arthritis. Lynn lost over 45 pounds. Calotrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calotrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calotrin has an amazing 86% success rate with their 90-day supply. And this week, take advantage of their President's Day sale. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is so easy. Just text the word HISTORY to the code 30605, and we'll send you a link to this special offer. Again, text HISTORY, that's HISTORY, using the code 30605.